it's not about a quick solution, right? This is actually like a lifestyle that you're taking upon yourself. Like spirituality or really getting to know yourself, these aren't necessarily things that are outside of life. They are life.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. Welcome back. I hope everybody fared really well during that eclipse full moon, all these retrogrades. Yeah, I'm actually personally really astounded with how wonderful it was for me. It was a really integrative weekend. I know it's hitting everybody differently. I was prepared to be Chicken Little with a pan over my head, keeping myself safe if the sky was falling, which wasn't the case at all. It was really peaceful and beautiful, very heart-opening and healing. I've energetically stepped back for the last little bit because I've been preparing my body for our first embryo transfer this month. So that was me up at the retreat house, laying pretty low, relaxing, nourishing deeply. Max came and joined me for the weekend, and we just kind of did this work, TBM, and watched some really informative documentaries and enjoyed nature. And we're just staying in a really peaceful and open state. So that's what I've been up to. I feel like the things that bring me a lot of joy during this time are brands and whatnot that inspires me. But I have sort of a mini one here to share a couple of cool things to put on your radar. The first is, I think by now, anybody who's been listening for a while knows that I'm the biggest fan of Agnes Bedu. She's actually been on the podcast. We'll link her below. You can find anything I'm mentioning down below. It's just stuff that I've been into. And particularly, I want to share her bag because I ended up reaching out to her and just saying, I just got this ping in a deep imagining. And I went, I need her bag and suede, the sack too. And so I reached out and I was like, are you doing these, Agnes? Can you do that? And she was like, I've never done a full suede before. I've been actually, you know, really trying to source that material. And because of this, she found the right material. And therefore, I have the very second, she has the first suede sack too. But what I want to put on your radar, everybody, for the fall, I just saw on Instagram that General Store will be carrying her belt sack in suede. So it's a light suede, a tan suede. It's so beautiful. So I'm putting that on everybody's radar. If anybody is in the bag realm, I love her bags particularly because they act as my like entire bag. They're my overnight bag that I pack up to take up to the forest house with me because I already have clothes there. It's the bag that I take to the store or the farmer's market with me and I load up with with all of my food. It's what I carry my computer in and when I'm having to go to meetings. So it's actually a really, really versatile and awesome bag. So putting that on your radar, and anybody who's into the belt sack, which is so cool, just know that General Store will be carrying that in the fall. I saw that. So wanted to put that on your radar. Also a really cool brand that you might not be familiar with, or you may be. I actually had one of their bags, and I hope I'm saying this totally correctly, but Sesta, it's awesome. They have the black lunch pail. So those two bags have been the ones that I've been carrying all season, and I love them because they're a mission-driven brand. They're sustainable. And so what they do is they support the work of 1,400 female artisans in Rwanda, Africa. And they're so beautiful. And I had one of their other lunch pail bags that I actually wore last year to Max's brother's wedding. And everybody asked where I got it. And then I went for their black bag. So that's linked below if anybody's looking for a really cool two accessories. Accessories are my favorite, I think. For me personally, they really project my authentic code. in the sense that I like to dress masculine and have really beautiful feminine accessories, or vice versa. I'll dress very feminine but use masculine accessories. And these two are actually the perfect combination of both. Another thing I want to put on your radar is this really affordable sandal that I saw on my friend's Instagram. I'll link her Instagram here so you can see it, someone wearing it. But as soon as I saw them, I was like, I'm buying those. And they're called Nomadic State of Mind. And it's the Kaima Camel 2, linked below. They're kind of this woven, really cool sandal that I think everybody will dig. So that's linked if you want to check it out. Two more things. Last year on the podcast episode with Andy Mant, the founder of Blue Blocks, you heard us talking about the light bulbs that they're putting out. So very low blue light Lumi light bulbs, and they officially have them. And so I have them now. I've been testing them. I love them. One's for daytime, one's for evening. They're fantastic. So anybody who is into the blue blocking as I am, which I know many in this community are at this point. And if you're like, what is that? We have two episodes with him that'll be linked below that you can listen to. And you will understand why it's so exciting that they have these light bulbs out, especially for a lot of people in the States who have newer builds. It's actually illegal in California now to have fixtures that you can put incandescent light bulbs in, which is what I have at the Forest House. So these are a fantastic, awesome option if you fall into that boat. So putting those on your radar, check them out. And lastly, there's an Instagram that everybody should follow, Indie Aficionals. She's the cutest woman who's a forager, and I can't stop watching all of her videos because she even shows you how to forage in, let's say, Los Angeles and mulch and find mushrooms. And then, oh, last but not least, I did have a session with this witch, Kiki. Kiki, the opulent witch, a week ago, a friend put her on my radar and I was like, yeah, that sounds right. I want to have a session with her. And during this time, it's really nice. She's all about just making sure that your field is very clear and all around awesome. And so I've turned my mom onto her. Grace on our teams had a session with her, and we're actually doing a full session with her as a team. So I'll link her site below. But yeah, she's all about like ancestral karma breaking and healing. And she is just a real joy and the authentic deal. So if anybody is looking for that, no future projection, none of that stuff, just really about keeping things clear, high vibes, and really, really healing. So she'll be linked below. And just a couple of company updates that are really exciting. Number one, we've moved off the Facebook group. We just had so many requests to create a much more intimate and safe space to share in for our actual members who are actually doing the work. Therefore, we have launched for Pathway members only, a really incredible, supportive new group that is fantastic so far. There are already over 4,000 members in there. And it's so cool because even in your profile, each of you are getting so individual and open about why you're here. Like everybody's giving their sign and what they've manifested, what they're here for, what workshops they've done. So the community aspect is on fire. It's a really evolved group. Everybody's incredibly respectful and everybody's really inside the group to help each other grow and learn. And we're just totally beside ourselves in the company. Each of us have been spending like an hour a day in there and just writing to each other, like what an amazing community we have. We're so lucky to be a part of this. So if you are a Pathway member and you didn't receive the email, make sure on our homepage on Intercom to get in touch with one of our customer support members who will send you the link to get in there. And again, this is Pathway member specific. And if you haven't heard, we have our newest coach who is available for bookings. I talked about it a couple of episodes ago, Atara Valentine, and you have actually something really exciting to look forward to very soon in the brand. You will be hearing more from him on this podcast. And he's fantastic. He really, really specializes in how he overcame a lot of the adversity and trauma he's experienced in his life. He's an artist and he is so well-spoken, incredibly diverse in the work. He's been trained into it. So if you've been looking for another person to work with in this brand, Atar is your person. And a really cool announcement is we finally have opened up coaching to everybody. We got so many requests. So you can actually do it now, even if you haven't purchased any workshops or you're not a Pathway member. It's open for absolutely everybody. He now joins Amanda Blair and Heather Whitaker, that are the three coaches that we have. And we have one more training right now. So we'll have a really cool rounded out group that can support anybody and everybody. Look out for cool stuff coming soon in the month of August regarding coaching as well. Other than that, I'm really excited to get into today's guest. I don't think there's probably a person on here who's not familiar with Young Pueblo, the Instagram account. I know I've been following it for years, and I've been gaining so much wisdom through all of the writings and the teachings on that account, which we get into deeply in this podcast episode. Diego Perez is the writer, speaker, and meditator behind the pen name Young Pueblo, the very famous, as I said, and inspiring Instagram account. And he's also now the best-selling author of Inward, which navigates the distance, union, self-love, and understanding one faces on the journey to healing. He's just a really, really beautiful human being who has been at the meditation practice for so long that you can hear it in his voice, his integration, his open heart, his humility, evolved energy. He's just a really, really beautiful spirit that a lot of us have a lot to learn from in this episode. So I'm going to stop chatting and let us get into it and enjoy it. So looking forward to this conversation for such a long time now. And the first question that I pop into with everybody is, what is your cultural background and upbringing?
It's interesting. I think it's a real mix of things. I was born in Ecuador in the city of Guayaquil, and I came with my family to the United States when I was about 4 years old. So I definitely think of myself as Ecuadorian American. I think it's a good mixture of both. And I grew up in the city of Boston. So I think part of that is also just like living in an urban environment. So I think a mixture of those three things.
How was that growing up in Boston and also just growing up within the dynamics of your family?
It was good. I really loved growing up in Boston. I felt like it was really like preparation to go to, you know, to live in New York City as I do now. And I think it was, you know, you have to be really independent. Also, the time that I grew up in Boston, it wasn't like the safest place. So I really had to be, you know, street savvy to get around and just like really learn to be self-dependent in some ways. I think in particular, like growing up at the time, my family was very poor. So and when I turned 13 years old, I remember asking my mom, like, you know, I really want a cell phone. And she was like, well, you need to figure that out on your own. You know, you need to like get a job. My mom just like opened that door for me to just see myself as like my own kind of leader and like just come up with creative solutions to get myself the things that I need and want. But it was a good time. You know, I really am so grateful for growing up. I think the challenge of poverty was definitely very difficult and in some ways rather traumatizing. Overall, I think it really helped me become the person I am today.
A question I ask everybody as well is, what is your astrological sign?
I'm Sagittarius.
Oh, fantastic. That actually makes a lot of sense. I follow your work closely, and that makes quite a bit of sense along with your spiritual practice. Before we get into all of that, I've had the opportunity now to listen to you on multiple other podcasts, and it sounds like you had a really pivotal rock bottom. Maybe tell us a little bit about what led up to that and that experience.
Sure. I think the really big rock bottom was the summer of 2011. There was, you know, just a number of causes going into that effect where I basically was just ignorant of myself. Like I didn't know what was happening inside of myself. And because my like internal dynamics were unknown to me, it led me to just reinforcing patterns where I was seeking pleasure to the point where it became pretty destructive, where I became really unhealthy, you know, in my body, in my relationships and friendships with my girlfriend. And it just sort of kind of culminated and in one particular evening where I was like on a bunch of drugs and just feeling really terrible. And I felt like I just hit this rock bottom where, you know, I really felt like I was dying. And my life felt a little more expanded in that moment. Like I felt like I could see more of myself really clearly. And in this moment of like intense agitation arose this like pretty sharp clarity. And I realized that, you know, like I didn't want to live my life this way. I felt horrible and I don't want to to die without being, you know, nowhere near my own potential. I think from that moment on, I really started, you know, I put away all the really heavy drugs and started really being honest with myself. I think that was like the main primary step to getting to know myself. And I really practiced honesty and started building better habits and did that for about a year. And then I started meditating, which really kind of took the whole healing learning process to a whole nother level.
I love what you touched on, that you started practicing honesty and healthier habits. What did those look like before you had that ping to go do your first meditation retreat?
Yeah, I think I was curious. You know, I've always been like inclined towards like, you know, reading and trying to understand the world. So when I brought that lens to myself, I was like, okay, why do I want to smoke so much weed? Why do I want to like go to parties all the time? Why can't I just sit with myself? And I brought that curiosity inward. I started noticing that whenever I would feel this tension, I started going through this questionnaire with myself, like, what's happening right now? Why do I not want to be alone? And that radical honesty just illuminated all these different parts of myself. And I started seeing like, oh, I actually have a lot of issues with anxiety, and I have a lot of issues with sadness, and they have been multiplying for a very long time. Honesty itself has been just like the most primary powerful tool. I think that in and of itself really showed me my own power.
I imagine that a lot of people that do start down the journey of looking at our trauma, our past, our pain, I hear it a lot within our brand that they'll start the inner child work that we do, and then they go, oh no, it's too much to look at. It's too intense. And granted, it can be, and we certainly recommend doing it side by side with a professional. But for the person who does have that fear and the pain of how much will come up, do you have advice on that now after practicing for so long, just how you started to have the courage to take a look at that and sit with it and feel it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because the mechanics of our mind, they're structured in the same way. The contents of our mind are very different. Our minds work similarly, but the histories that we all carry are so different. So people who have enormous amounts of trauma, they may want to like ease into this work. And I think there's a place, like a special place, and it's rather subtle, but you can kind of find it out after you start trying a bunch of different techniques and you start kind of feeling out, you know, what's actually challenging me without overwhelming me. And I think that's a pretty special point that people want to find for themselves, because right, the technique that I'm practicing right now is working for me, but it may not necessarily work for everyone else. You know, it may be like too much or something like that. So it's really important to just find that sort of middle path for yourself and then start moving from there. And it was interesting because in the beginning, my personal middle path was just being honest. And then after I was practicing that for a year, then it was like, okay, now I feel ready to meditate. There's so much dense conditioning and so many layers of trauma that you really need to find your own point of entry into this internal work. But the good thing is that there are so many techniques out there. And I think it's such a special time for this whole field of like getting to know yourself and expanding your perspective and really letting go and doing some serious, serious healing.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's a wonderful segue into, tell us about your first meditation retreat, how profound it was, and what you walked away with from it.
It was fantastic. I mean, I can say that now that it was fantastic because, you know, it's like on the other side of the fire. But when I was like in it and actually doing it, it was just one of the, by far, the hardest challenge that I had ever encountered. And I remember most of that retreat, I spent it trying to figure out and convince myself that it was okay for me to leave. And the only reason that I really didn't leave was because this was pre like Uber and, you know, Lyft times. So I was in the middle of nowhere in Washington State. So and I had gotten a ride there, and I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time. So I had gotten a ride like an hour and a half north. But the person that I'd gotten a ride with, like I had no way of communicating with him because it was a silent meditation retreat. And I knew that he wasn't leaving. So I was basically stuck. You know, I was like, I could leave, but then I would be in the middle of nowhere and I would have no way to get out. So once it really dawned on me that I was wasting so much time trying to figure out how to leave, you know, I'm in day 7. And then it just hit me, you know, I'm here and I'm not going to leave. Let me just try my best. And from then on, I stopped adding all this tension to the process and started just, you know, going with it and doing as best as I could. I was probably meditating like maybe like 6 hours a day during that course. And you really can meditate up to like 10 or 11 hours a day. Even though I was putting in all this like, you know, shoddy effort, I ended up getting amazing results. And I really felt how much less dense my mind was at the end of it. Like I literally, my mind felt like it had lost 100 pounds. I felt like I learned so, so, so very much. And I think I was 2 years out of college then. And I felt how in 10 days, I learned more than I had learned in 4 years of college.
What was that resistance that was coming up for you?
It's just the ego. You know, it's just the ego not wanting to change. I think the ego is just a series of past patterns. And all it does is just repeat the past over and over again. And then the moment you start doing something that's, you know, strikingly different, it just tries to hit the brakes. And it'll just do anything to stop you until eventually, you know, if you keep putting that effort and you start building those new mental faculties, then it starts calming down. And then there are techniques that you can use to calm the mind down and start opening up those layers.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's just so important to highlight because we often hear it in pop culture. I meditate, you know, I have this meditation practice. I personally have been doing it for 10 years. I do TM, well, Vedic, same thing. But you hear all of this. And for the person who's curious, I just think it's important to hear inside perspective that it can be very challenging. There will be a lot of resistance. It's not perfectionism. And so I really like that you're sharing that from both a scientific perspective and just going through it. And then when you did get out on the other side of that very first retreat, what could you see that was visibly different or could you feel that was different in your life versus when you went in?
I love that question. And just to go back a little, I love how you pointed that out too, because I don't think people quite realize that all of your conditioning has been going almost like a train. You know, it's going very rapidly in one direction. And then the moment you start deconditioning the mind, you're literally going in the other direction. So to be able to like really find a good path and speed for yourself, it takes time to like get that momentum going. But I love that question with what I was feeling. I remember that I could distinctly just feel more, like the emotions inside of me felt much more crisp. And I also remember seeing, like, I literally felt like I could see, when I would look at a tree, I felt like I could see more of the leaves than my mind could process before, which I thought was so interesting. You know, I would look down at the gravel, look up at the sky, and everything just seemed a little more vibrant. And it's been interesting like that, because it's not like it's a psychedelic experience or anything like that. It's really just your mind getting cleansed.
What a cool way to put it. That's incredible. There's so many places I want to take this. But, you know, one thing I really want to ask during this, well, you said something that I want to touch on actually before I move forward. You said that there are practices you can do to slow your mind down and open up the layers. For just a simple beginner tool of presence, what would be one of your most effective that you love for that?
Yeah, in particular, so when you do this 10-day Vipassana course, the first 3 days, what they teach you this technique called Anapana. Anapana is awareness of the breath. And when you do that for 3 days, for 10 hours a day, the mind becomes so subtle and you become very aware of its movements and you start really just literally calming it down. That's the practice that, you know, whenever personally when my mind gets a little shaky, I go back to that awareness of the breath and it settles it down. And then I can keep practicing Vipassana, where Vipassana is you're observing your body to develop insight and to see what's, you know, what's actually real and what's happening in the body. But the two really work hand in hand in this particular tradition.
What have you noticed coming up the most for your community right now when they write into you or they respond, you know, via comments? What do you notice being the through line of tension or pain or attachment? And what's your perspective on how to work with that right now?
I think it's interesting. I think, I mean, in particular today, you know, I put something up about how really transforming your mind and just building these new habits, it's not easy. Right? It takes time. And it really, you know, connected with a number of people. And I think that's one thing that I've been seeing as a trend is just more people realizing that it's not about a quick solution, right? This is actually like a lifestyle that you're taking upon yourself, like spirituality or really getting to know yourself. These aren't necessarily things that are outside of life. They are life, and they're not like fringe or anything like that. You know, it's, you should know how to use your mind, right? You should have a good relationship with your heart. And being able to engage with yourself in these deeper ways, it creates just these dramatic like reverberations that positively affect your life. And I think a lot of people are kind of settling into the process, you know, using whatever techniques, because that's one thing I do. Like, I really don't see myself as a teacher. Like, I really think of myself as an explorer. And what I try to write about is just personal transformation itself, and hopefully give people different things that they can use to develop self-awareness, like different ideas that they can think about them and see, maybe, you know, get some new insight about themselves on the intellectual level. But in reality, like, we all practice so many different things. Like, I meditate, but then there are, you know, so many therapists that follow me, and then, or people who do different like healing modalities. But there is some degree of commonality, right? Like, we're all developing our happiness, trying to develop a little less mental tension, developing our compassion and our ability to just be aware and engage with reality in a way where we're not projecting. But I think in general, it's what I'm seeing from people is just like, just settling in and being like, okay, this is a long-term process. And you know what, I'm not going to fight it. And I'm going to do my best to keep taking steps forward, even if they're little steps.
I think that's great, great perspective. We hear so often, I meditate, you know, I do this type of meditation. I know people who will feel the resistance or they don't know where to start. If you were talking to somebody who is just curious about mindfulness in general, and maybe they're not ready to commit to, you know, a full 10-day Vipassana, which can be so overwhelming or maybe unaffordable or any of the things, what direction would you start to point them in just to get a taste of how powerful it can be?
You know, I actually don't try to guide individuals. One thing I did today was I asked people, you know, what is it that's helping you let go and grow and heal? And a lot of people are just writing down, like, you know, I do this type of yoga, I do this type of meditation. And then you can literally go through, especially if you're new to this world, you can look and start doing your own research and checking out what it is that is really connecting with you. And I think, like, in addition to what I was saying earlier about finding something that meets you where you're at, where it's challenging but not overwhelming, you also really want to connect with your intuition and see, you know, what is this practice really connecting with me? Is this something that's really something that I want to put my time into? I remember one time before I was fully committed to Vipassana, I tried this like type of chanting, and I remember I did it and I was like, oh, this is really cool. But it didn't have that same type of connection where it was like, you know, I want to put all of my, you know, so much of my time and effort into this. I think that's like especially important because there's so much out there. And it's interesting because Vipassana, it actually doesn't cost any money. You know, it's actually free, which is a very pretty different from most Western, you know, modalities that you can access. And this, sorry, not West, it's not Western at all, but things that you can access in the Western world. But it's, you know, all run on donation base. So like after you finish a 10-day course, you could donate. And I remember the first time I went, I probably donated like $20.
Wow.
That's what I had. But it's beautiful because it's a place where like people go and all they want from you is to like, you know, to be happy. And then you just go back out into the world and you do your best. But it is difficult because 10 days is a very long time. And also different techniques, they reach different depths of the mind. So I definitely respect people who, you know, when they hear about this practice and they're like, oh, that's not for me, that's totally fine. But there definitely is something out there for you. And even if it's as simple as developing honesty or through some type of therapy, you know, what are the things that we're doing when we're working with a therapist? We're developing honesty, we're developing self-awareness, and we're developing like this ability to come forward with our truth. And those are extremely important, you know, mental faculties that really need cultivation.
I love what you said. And I think it is so important to individualize and really listen to yourself. I think you had so many important touch points in everything you said. I had no idea that it was donation based as well. And I've really had it on my schedule to really try it. I've always wanted to try it if and when I get pregnant and really sit with myself in those moments and during that transformation. So thank you for sharing that. When you have a trigger arise, and of course you've been practicing for a very long time, but when you have a trigger arise in your life or that feeling of true attachment in the moment, how do you tackle it?
I love that question. I think the first thing is that I try to notice it, because like sometimes you're rolling in it, right? You're just kind of like all of a sudden you're angry or you're like, you know, and a lot of times I think one thing that happens is that when you start meditating a lot, and this has been the experience of like me, of my wife and I, right? We've been meditating since I started in 2012 and she started in 2013, and we put a lot of hours into meditation. So we're not like irate people. Like if we're angry, oftentimes I'll find myself very quietly angry inside of my own mind. And all of a sudden I'm like rolling in anger or like, you know, creating these stories. And the first big step is self-awareness. It's like, oh, right, I'm actually being really silly right now. And just like not chastising yourself, but like almost like having, that's what I do, is like having fun with myself. And I'm like, okay, wow, that's pretty silly. And I'm just, you know, making my mind denser, because I think there's a really important difference, right? You do want to be like, if something, a difficult situation has happened in life, then you definitely want to give yourself time to like patiently process and figure out what is your best next action. But that's pretty different than just like rolling in these like really dense reactions and just kind of making your mind heavier and heavier and heavier and literally just hating on a situation or a person or something like that. That's not, you know, productive or helpful at all. And in all actuality, all you're doing is strengthening your own reaction for future aversion and anger. And so what I basically jump through is like self-awareness and then bringing myself back to the present moment. And that's as simple as reminding myself, oh, right, like I'm in my thoughts. Let me come back to like what's happening right in front of me. But I'm not always successful. You know, like I have a lot of growth to do myself.
Yeah, ever, ever growing. Aside from meditation, so many people are obviously experiencing these times so differently. Mm-hmm. What have been other self-care tips that have kept you even keeled during this time at home, you know, like you're saying, taking little steps forward that you can while being present? What have been those for you?
Well, meditation is definitely the big one. So I meditate like an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening. And that those kind of function like the pillars of my day. But in between that time, I've been trying to be much more in touch with what I want to accomplish and making those goals actually achievable. One thing I'm trying to do pretty consistently is just read, you know, not read, you know, the many, many articles that are released every day, but to read actual books, to read mm-hmm. books that I know have been on my list that I've been really excited to read. But then for some reason, because I'm so busy or I think I'm busy, then I don't end up doing that. So trying to just give myself small victories by like sitting down for like anywhere between 20 minutes to an hour to actually read, to spend the time I want to spend to actually make ginger tea, because I know my body loves it. And when I have ginger tea, it really, really helps like my whole day be better. And just making sure that I kind of just fulfill these tiny little goals so that the rest of my day is better, and then and so that my tomorrow also starts off strongly.
Well, I'm curious, what is on your book list right now?
Well, right now I've been steadily chipping away. I'm reading this one book by Annie Lamont, who it's called Bird by Bird. Have you read that one?
No.
It's basically instructions on writing and a little bit about life, like her life philosophy, but she writes so beautifully about writing but does that through the lens of like her own. It's like a memoir, essentially. It's gotten me really excited because I have more writing projects ahead of me. So I'm trying, you know, before I get into like a really big project, like I'm always trying to improve my skill as a writer. So my editor told me I should definitely read that. And besides that, I've also been reading this really exciting book called October about the Russian Revolution in 1917. And it basically just breaks down that whole year. And it's just been like wonderful reading it, because it's a period of time that I've always been very curious about. And it took time for me to find like relatively objective view of what happened then. Yeah, I've been enjoying it. It's like reading that book has been like seeing a movie in my mind. It's been really
cool. Wow. It actually, I can feel how joyous it must be digging in and finally scoring the right information that you're wanting to absorb.
Right.
If you were to give your own definition of attachments and ego, how do you describe it or analogies around it?
Sure. Oh, that's such a cool question. So when I think of attachment, I think of it as the moment when wanting becomes craving. And that's the definitive aspect of attachment, because through craving, we develop the clinging that becomes attachment. And, you know, it's fine to like want things in life, but how do you go about wanting them? How do you go about attaining your goals? If you're trying to attain your goals in a way where you're constantly developing tension through the process, and every time you don't get what you want, you feel miserable, and you basically make your happiness dependent on a future outcome, then you're deep in attachment. You know, you're deeply, deeply attached. But if you're working in a wise manner where, yes, I have these goals, these things I want to accomplish, and whenever I don't accomplish them, you know, I go back to the drawing board and I keep trying, and you do that whole process with a relatively balanced mind, then you're working just fine. So to me, the moment that wanting becomes craving, that's really it gives birth to attachment. And ego is, I think of it, it just says it's a giant collection of all of the information that we have captured from the past. It's really just like an accumulation of our perceptions, our reactions, and everything that we're feeling, but feeling sort of in a blind manner, if that makes sense.
I love everything you just said and how you laid out both. It's incredibly digestible. And even the way that we approach manifestation here, you did such a beautiful overview of the difference between, I mean, I say it in a way of dog paddling, and I love really trying to get into the act of floating and not craving. And I think that's a beautiful, beautiful connection. And certainly the ego, I'm in full agreement with. There are a couple of the things that you've written on Instagram alone that I'd love for you to speak on and get a little bit deeper into your thought process behind them. Can I do that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So the first one, and this one's excellent. True love doesn't hurt, attachments do.
I love that one. I wrote that one a long time ago, I think in 2016. And that one, I really was trying to understand love through the teachings of the Buddha. And there are so many different ways to understand love and different definitions given to the word, even to attachment. But I love the definition of attachment that the Buddha gave, which is, you know, similar to what I was saying before about craving. And to me, when I think about love, attachment is sometimes, that word itself is sometimes confused with the word connection. And I really see like I'm developing a deeper connection with someone, but I can do that without being attached. But the moment that I get really attached to wanting things, and not just wanting, but craving for things to be a very precise way, then I'm just filling the relationship with attachments. And that is eventually going to hurt, because at some point, you know, life is a series of movements, and eventually these movements are going to reveal that everything you want can't come to be. And especially the things that you crave, they can't come to be. So you're going to feel hurt, and that pain is going to come from your own attachments. And it's interesting, because I've been maturing that thought and thinking a lot about how it is true, like in a relationship, especially a very loving and long-term relationship, there are these voluntary commitments. And I think that's what makes relationships really strong. When, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to put expectations on you, and I'm like, you have to do this X, Y, and Z, and it comes off as a form of controlling, but instead, you can have these sort of consistent moments where you're checking in with your partner, and you're trying to touch base on how can I best support you, and instead of someone telling you what to do, you're volunteering, and you're saying, you know, what can I do to support you, and that creates a situation where there is much less friction. And I think to me, that creates a lot more harmony, and, you know, both of you end up supporting each other's happiness in a much deeper way.
Sounds so healthy. I love it. And here's one that we get this question in a different form, and I love how you lay it out. How do you know when the healing is working? When you can breathe normally and think calmly during moments that used to make you feel tension?
Yeah, that's a big one. That one was also written a while ago, I think like 2017 maybe, or maybe a little earlier. And I think that was just like the basis of progress, right? Like when you're, because life, you're not going to stop bad things from happening, right? Like there will always be these like uncontrollable aspects of life, and that's absolutely fine. But if you can manage to get a deep understanding of your mind and a better relationship with your mind, then the things that used to hurt so much will start hurting a lot less. And your reaction to what's happening will stop being so intense. And I think that's really important because, you know, absolutely, there will be people who we come across or who we've come across in our past who have done terrible things to us. But once we start really understanding that the hurt truly begins with our perception, and then our reaction to that perception makes that even worse, we can start peeling back those layers and kind of slowing down that process so that we can not feel such an intense thing, because we don't realize that every time we have very, very intense emotions and really just any reactions in general, we're accumulating these imprints in the mind, and they're affecting the way we not only see the world, but the way we will behave in the future.
This one is excellent. Your emotional history impacts your daily behavior. Letting go of these old patterns allows you to think and act in a new way.
Yeah, so that one definitely touches on what I just said a moment ago, because this one really took a while for me to realize, because it is something that can be so subtle that you don't quite realize how the past is sort of pushing itself into your present, and how if you have like commonly reacted with whatever your defense mechanism was, whether it was like anger or fear or disassociating or whatever it could be, once these difficult situations happen, you will tend to react in a particular way. But then if you've reacted so many times, then you're going to be much more likely to feel that same reaction over and over. And we don't quite realize that your first initial impulse when something difficult happens, that's just the past. That's not your authentic you. When you take a moment to process and you're starting to really see the patterns that are flowing around in your mind, and you're like, okay, right, that's the past me. Okay, what do I actually want to do now? And you give yourself that moment to really pause and process the situation mindfully, then you can come forward with like, you know, how do I actually want to be in this moment? And then the authentic you comes forward.
Agreed, wholeheartedly. I'm quickly interrupting this podcast episode to tell you that we created the Expanded Podcast to be an educational tool for grounded manifestation. My unique manifestation process is rooted in psychology teachings, neuroscience research, and it's designed to help you unblock and expand your subconscious belief system in a step-by-step process. If you want to hear profound stories of how our members have manifested extraordinary things into their life, from love, money, homes, career, even more well-being, I invite you to listen to our podcast episodes titled The Process. You'll learn in them that our online workshops are comprised of teachings, journaling, and my own style of hypnosis exercise, which we call Deep Imaginings. We are always recommending getting started with How to Manifest, Unblocked Inner Child, Unblock Shadow, and they're available a la carte, or join our Pathway membership for $27 a month to get unlimited access to every single one of our workshops and content. Since you're tuning into this podcast, we want to offer you the code EXPANDED, all caps EXPANDED, for $20 off your first month of the Pathway 2.0, which comes out to less than a dollar a day. Or $20 off any 2.0 a la carte courses. Enjoy the rest of this episode. There's this concept when I even find myself in this. When I was younger, there was a version of me that was unempowered. And it was definitely one that was angry at prior circumstances and very attached and a lot of ego going on and angry at current circumstances, desiring and dog paddling towards a future experience. And in the work you've done for yourself, what is your definition of going from, and the word victim is very triggering, so I want to say unempowered, to a version of yourself that feels empowered now? What does that look like, and what makes that difference or that transition in perspective?
So there was a pretty big transition. When I was about 15 years old, I got to have multiple experiences where I got to see how powerful I could really be, especially with a group of people. So like I was in the world of activism and organizing in the city of Boston when I was growing up. And I got to really see like when people put their mind, literally like the creation of an idea, and then actually physically it becoming real. And not the type of thing where I'm just like making something with my hands, but where we're sort of pushing society to give us what we want. And I got to see that process be successful over and over. And that really just made me feel so much more empowered. And the way I see my power now coming into action is basically those moments where, you know, when you feel the old you cropping up and you really want to just take the easy route. And I take those moments as a challenge where I don't want to like quit on myself, where I don't want to give up and just like do the easy thing. What I found is that there's so much more effort, you know, without like pushing it and being too hard, that I could put into like these different aspects of my life where, you know, there was a lack of effort in my meditating practice that I was totally unaware of, that only in the past few months have I come to realize that like, oh, I could actually do this a little bit better. And the same thing with my writing. I've been realizing that, have I ever really tried my best? I'm not sure. Let me try and see what that actually feels like. And I think that to me is like really awakening my power, and even like adding a little more structure into my life has helped me like feel a lot freer and a lot more, you know, like just getting a little bit closer to my real potential. I think it's cool. And one thing that I always really hold true is, as enacting and reclaiming my power, is just like never letting other people dictate my future. You know, there's so many people who will, you know, will just kind of react to you with their fears. And, you know, so I keep my kind of goals close to myself now. And just like, I don't let the herd decide for me what my future will be. I'm going to continue trying to walk my path alone if necessary.
I love that. Yeah, I call those manifestation boundaries. It's usually just coming from other people's love or, you know, like you said, fear. And and I'm like, we show through action, you know, like when you accomplish it or you arrive, whatever that is, that's where they expand themselves to know that that was possible for you. So I think that's great. You touched on a lot of great things there.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
Have you found in your own life that craving slows down the manifestation process?
Well, yeah. So I have the gift of reading energy. That's sort of how I fell into what I do. And it's really tricky. Well, it's not tricky. It's interesting because a lot of manifestation is usually based in, you know, like these very egoic wants, or it's very abstract. You know, it's like be in the vortex, think positive or whatever. And I don't believe in any of those things. So I can actually see when people are strongly craving what I call it the energy of dog paddling. The reason that I see that we're doing that when we're doing it is that we don't feel deserving of what we want, or we don't feel that it's possible. We haven't seen to believe that it's possible for ourselves. So therefore, there's that level of like you're talking about, like chasing or craving. And in fact, it's when you are in that place of complete worthiness or floating or deservingness, or you totally know that it is possible. And we use neuroscience and psychology in our work through simple neuroscience and mirror neurons. You've seen to believe, you've shown your subconscious based on everything that it's picked up in the past and all the limits that it didn't believe were possible. It's now seen to believe through what I call expanders, other people who have gone on to accomplish what you want, or they embody or are successful in. And when you have all of those factors in place, there's no need to do that anymore, to crave or chase or dog paddle. So in fact, it's a force of magnetism. It's literally magnetizing what you want to you. And I really believe that God, the universe, you know, whomever we're each connected to, is really here to help connect us with everything we're wanting. And even more so, I actually believe that it's really a journey of consciousness, that the reason why we're doing this dance with God, the universe, it's just to get back into that totally whole, authentic, worthy of self that we were born as, you know, and through pain and shame and programming, we build up the ego. And when we start to delayer that, that's where the universe is really rewarding us, is that we're starting to get back into that true, authentic self. And from our core self, starting to get clear on what our soul really wants and desires. And the more we get there and the more empowered we are there, through what I call blocking or expanding, there's no real dog paddling, no real craving. It's just existing.
Wow. I love that so much. There's such a strong parallel between how you broke it down and how I see it within my own mind. Before I came onto this podcast with you, I was asking myself, because I know a lot of your work revolves around manifestation, I was like, I've seen how the process of purifying my own mind and literally doing this deconditioning work has made it much, much easier for things to come, you know, for things to just like pop into my life. And it's something that I found really interesting. And I've also been thinking a lot about how, you know, like vibrations attract like vibrations. And if I'm like purifying my own, then it's going to be a lot easier for me to just, you know, realize, okay, what is it that I want next? Or what goal am I trying to accomplish next, and really allow my aspirations to just line up and become really clear. And then at the same time, let them go. If I keep my aspirations in the forefront of my mind and I'm thinking about them constantly in a way where I'm becoming fixated, then I'm just adding tension to the process. But if I know, I'm like, okay, this is where I'm going, and I can just have that idea of like, I understand my trajectory, then I can just work without putting so much tension into the process.
I love it. Intention energetically is exactly the right word. That's exactly it. Because like the way you just framed it, if you are intention, it means A, you don't believe it's possible, and B, you don't feel deserving of it. So the more that you're, and I love the term you're using, purifying and cleansing your mind, the more that you're, and I call that the more you're becoming your authentic self, you're clear from that place, like that true, authentic soul place of what the next thing is that you need, you're there. You're already, you know what I mean? You're already connected with it. So I'm so glad you're recognizing that in your own practice, because I really believe that's where it's all at.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And it's been interesting too, because I'm, as soon as I've been like dealing with my cravings, it gets to a point where it's like what you want is less. And it just kind of also speeds up the whole process too. And my main thing now that I've been really working on is being happy now, right? Even though I have these goals, even though there are these other things that I want to accomplish, like be happy now. And then stop worrying about the future so much, and stop thinking about it as later, but at it as right now. Like, what can I, you know, how can I best approach and engage with this moment?
I love that. Every morning in that vein, I don't believe in things like superstition or doing superstition. You know, there's a lot of that conversation. And every morning before the shower, it's just it's a practice of mine where I'll jump up and down, just like thanking for everything in my life right now that I genuinely am just so grateful for, from how I feel to, you know, my family, my home. And it's a way to take inventory. And again, it had, like, for any listener who listens to this podcast, it's nothing to do with manifesting quicker. It's just for exactly what you're talking about, like bringing back to the present time of my life and my moment that I'm in, that I am so happy and grateful, and the, like, for what I have and where I'm at right now. And I think it's just important personally to do that for ourselves too. And I personally am somebody who is very quick in my nature. So it's something I kind of need to anchor me in, because things happen so fast for me, or things I want now come very quickly, that it's simple for me to be on to the next, that really helps me stay here and so thankful for being here and surrounded by everything that I've consciously called in and wanted to have that I have now in every aspect of my life, not just on the material plane, but like even being the person that I've always wanted to be and being that.
Right. One thing that you're making me think about is how I have this one friend who's really wise, and he was telling me that one thing that he has been understanding is that when difficult things start coming up in one's life, he's like, recognize it, but then just do more good things, you know, like offset that karma so that it's not just like, you're not just like living for yourself, but you're like doing good things for others. And I think that helped like awaken a bunch of different things in me, because I'm definitely trying to like overcome selfishness and all these kind of like human habits that have been deeply ingrained inside of all of us. Mm-hmm. And focusing on giving has been a big part of my 2020. And that's really helped me double down on the laws of the universe, because I really believe in cause and effect. And if I put in these types of actions, then I'm going to get results that are similar to those actions. And focusing on just giving has brought this like different type of abundance to my life, where I'm not giving, and I'm not just talking like material things, but like just encountering good people and encountering like different opportunities. And it's just, it's innumerable, right? The different ways that good things can come to you. But by focusing on doing good things, especially as selflessly as possible. And I think that's something that people shouldn't necessarily feel too bad about in the beginning, that it's fine if you're doing good things and you realize that there's a self-interest to it. Because even in the act of doing it, then you're still doing something to decrease the ego, because the ego itself, it doesn't actually want to give. So if you're finding a way for you to give, then that's great. That's a starting point, because eventually through the act of giving and, you know, cleansing the mind, purifying your mind, getting to know yourself, then the ego will become less powerful and your consciousness will become much more clear, much more powerful. And then that act of giving will become slowly much more selfless. And then that'll bring, you know, a whole new level of good things into your life.
I agree with the flow aspect. And like you're saying, like in manifestation energetics, when we're doing it from not a place of self-interest or because we feel we have to be a good person, or maybe we've taken that on through religion or whatever, I call them pings. There's this intuitive moment that will be communicated to you to like, do this now, go here now, check this now. And so I get them often, and I'll get pings even during COVID. I've had many pings of exactly who I need to go and financially support or help or anything like that, or who needs emotional support. And I think the more that we listen to how we're individually being communicated to show up or give or be of service, and we really listen, that is such a act of, not only is it a beautiful practice and it's so positive and great for the world and humanity, but it also, on a manifestation level, it shows that we're in this space of scarcity, like we're in a real feeling secure and deserving. And then when we're listening to how we're being told or communicated to do something and following through, it goes to show again that we're kind of like really following our own authentic divine path, and we're really leaning into it and being guided by it. And I think that that's so important and so powerful. And a question that came to mind while you were saying it, for any listener out there to just get ideas, what are the ways that you've been showing up or giving or being of service when you feel called to, or you're just doing it as a practice?
Yeah, I try to keep that mindset as often as possible. I think my wife and I have been pretty fortunate. She's a scientist, and I'm, you know, luckily Inward's doing well and it's selling copies. So one thing we try to do, it's almost like a number of circles, and I take care of my innermost circle first. So like my main priority is always my parents. My parents came to the United States. They knew that it would be a better life for all of us, but it came with its challenges. What my parents had to give was that they actually were a little bit more economically well off in Ecuador, because my mom worked in an office and my dad also worked in a company, and they made relatively good money, but because the level of uncertainty was so high there, they knew that this wouldn't necessarily continue. So when they brought us to the United States, my mom ended up cleaning houses and my dad ended up working in a grocery store. So for them to subject themselves to a whole new lifestyle, something that was radically different from what they were aiming for, and knowing that it was for the greater good and that they were playing a long-term game, to me, it's like, I don't know, it just fills me with so much energy to like do right by my life and try to like help as many people, but also make sure that whenever I'm helping people and anything good returns to me, that I first give to them. Mm. Because they're much better off now because my brother and I are older. My sister has a scholarship in college, but I still, you know, I'm trying to like pay off all my mom's credit card debt and like to, you know, just do these things where like they really come first. Because especially with like, if you've had a good relationship with your parents, like it's hard to pay that debt that they've taken such good care of you. And then outside of that, you know, I try to be really good to my friends and just to like, whenever, like whomever may cross my path, I think of this as like really, really important. Is like when you understand that it's to your personal benefit to not harm others, and you take that as a personal vow, you know, you're like, may I not harm anyone intentionally or unintentionally, like may I walk gently through this earth, then what you're essentially doing is that the benefits that you're giving to other people are innumerable, right? You're basically saying that whoever is going to cross your path, they don't need to worry about anything because you're not going to hurt them. And that's such a special gift that you give to the world. And that's something that I'm always trying to practice, is just like, you know, gentleness and being present with the people around me and trying to have a good, you know, giving nature. And that looks different every day. And it's definitely not perfect, but it's something that I'm working on, because at first it started with self-interest, you know, understanding that like, oh, right, like it is to my interest to not harm others, because in harming others, I'm harming myself. And it's also stopping future harm from coming to me. But over time, if you want the ego to no longer become dominant, then you're going to be successful. If you really make that your aspiration to like live from a place of love, to live from a place of true mental clarity, and to live from a place of like clear consciousness, then that's going to happen one way or another. The tools will come to you that you need to be successful. So, you know, you can really cultivate this type of like empowering selflessness that makes life a lot easier.
I have two questions on that front that came to mind. One, when you first took that vow, in what ways were you tested, and how did you actually find the tools how to address it? So maybe the testing could have looked like anything egoic and triggering. And then you had to, in that moment, after taking that vow, come up with the tools. Like you said, they'll come to you. Can you give us an example of what that looked like?
Sure. I think what immediately comes to mind is, I think over the past, like I think I personally had that vow for a long time. I think since I started meditating and really understanding the laws of cause and effect, and just seeing how, you know, the things that I do are really going to circle back and affect my life. So I need to be aware of that. But one thing that I try to do is be really gentle with the power and like effect that I have, especially now that like, you know, the Young Pueblo account has become so big and there's so many people reading my work. Like I try to be very gentle with the way I comport myself on the internet, and that I'm never harming anyone, but I'm actually randomly helping people. So one thing that I really like to do is like, I know that the reason that I am successful is because random people that I never asked to share my stuff decided to share my stuff. Mm. And that like really helps just bring more attention to this work that I'm doing. So something that I'm always trying to do is like what you were saying, whenever I get that ping and it's like, oh, like search the internet and find awesome stuff and share it without anyone asking me to. So like, I love the fact that we were given the tools of stories, because they're very low key. You know, you can share a story and a bunch of people will see them, and the next day they're gone. And they, you know, you can still have your grid. It can still be whatever it is that you want it to be. But one thing that I'm actively trying to do is just like find a lot of like writers of color or like women who are like making incredible stuff and just like share their work. That always feels really like the right thing to do, because yeah, it's kind of like in a way paying it forward for like the people who anonymously helped me.
That's so cool and beautiful. And it's a great example of how we could all implement our own version of something like that into our lives. That's very cool. You mentioned your book. It's out and about. I know many people who love it. Tell us about it.
Oh yeah. This is actually like a pretty good manifestation story. So I think after I started meditating, after the third course that I did, I really felt like I was very aware that I had a long way to go. Like I have a lot of growing and letting go, but I felt like I was learning some things. And I was also understanding that real healing was possible. And especially like we're talking 2013, 2014, the whole wave of wellness like wasn't really real yet. It wasn't really powerful yet. So a lot of people still, you know, were stumbling upon the fact that you could really deeply heal yourself. And to me, I was so like, it was kind of like shock and awe that I actually felt better, because I didn't really, you know, I just felt the pull to go meditate and practice Vipassana. I wasn't really like so keen on the effects and had no real idea of how big the effects would be. So to me, I was like, oh, wow, like so shocked by the fact that this could happen. And then also understanding that other people who were doing other techniques were also getting real results. So to me, that was so exciting. And I was like, you know, I should put together this like a little book about just like going through my own process and hopefully sharing things that may be universal and other people may feel really resonant towards. And I knew that I wanted to write this book, but I knew that if I first put together a manuscript and I handed it to publishers, that they would just laugh at me and they wouldn't like take it seriously. So what clicked into my mind was, if I share it on the internet and I start, you know, developing it and sharing it on the internet, maybe it will connect with people and then it'll win people over. And if people like it, then the institutions will come later. And I found that to be so completely true. It was like, once there were like enough people who really liked it, then publishing companies were reaching out to you and they're like, hey, do you want to release a book? And that's how it really kind of came together. Was I just spent like 2-3 years on Instagram, just kind of like honing my craft and figuring out what my voice is and what was the real message that I was trying to put out there. And through that sort of experimental phase, more and more people kind of gathered around and were following along. And then it became big enough that companies were reaching out to release Inward.
And I, you know, it's so funny because I've been approached for 2 years now to do a book, and talking about that ping process, I keep, you know, like October again, we'll revisit and kind of talk to the publishers and agents and stuff. But I haven't had the full download of what it looks like or what it's going to be. And so I haven't done it just to do it. I think that's so cool that you had the inspiration first and then you took it upon yourself to bring it to the people in a sense. It is actually a very great outline of manifestation. And again, being in that authenticity and not the craving, right? Like you right, really, yeah. And so I think that's really cool. And yeah, I'm trying to listen to the same thing as well. I see a lot of friends who run out to do the book just to do it or for the validation or the, you know, and I'm like, I have no interest. I love what we have going on right now. And I know it's going to be a real labor of love. So I need to have the download.
That's so cool. I love that you're not rushing the book, because that's something that I had to learn the hard way. I remember I knew that I wanted to create the book before I had even I think I had written like 4 poems, you know, so wow. I had nothing. But I knew, I was like, I want to write this book. And I wanted to, you know, give it time. But at the same time, I felt the pressure to like get it out there. And I remember I delayed the release of the book like 3 times. And every time I did it, it was so painful because I felt that old egoic pressure of like, get it out there. Because if you're published, then you're actually someone. And just like, you know, that like old school way of thinking. So giving myself the time that I actually needed was like the best practice, because then I got the, you know, a good outcome. Because I think I released the self-published version of Inward in November of 2017. And if I had released it in 2016, like I had planned, it wouldn't have been nowhere near as good as it was, you know? So it was the right choice. And I think, like, as an author personally, like, I'd rather write less books that are fantastic than many books that are not that good.
I agree. I mean, just personally, I know other people, you know, it's the quantity. But I think it's so important to listen to what is aligned with our soul. And I think that that's such a cool message. One burning question that actually keeps coming up since we've been talking, what do your parents think about your path and your meditation practice and how much you've transformed?
My parents are super supportive. I was raised Catholic and they're definitely still Catholic now. And my mom, so she saw the immediate like positive benefit that I got from meditating. And once I started taking it really seriously, I stopped drinking, I stopped smoking marijuana. I really just stopped taking any intoxicants at all. And it's been, I think like 5 years now since I've taken anything. So wow. I've been sober for a long time. And she saw that as an effect of the meditation. And I did that because I really wanted to give the practice a full experiment, because it feels like an experiment with my mind. And I was like, I want to double down on this experiment and see where this can really go, because there was a period where I was still smoking and meditating at the same time. And I could feel the way the smoking was making my mind denser when the meditation was trying to make my mind lighter and more refined. So I was like, all right, well, this has to go. Because I want to really see how deep we can take this. But my mom, she understands that, like, that this is, you know, my mom, she loves a good saint. And there are like all these saints in like the Catholic cosmology. And she sees this just as another path to like sainthood. So she really respects it. And I think one day she'll also try it, but we'll see. But they're really supportive. And I'm really lucky. I think I'm grateful that my parents were who they were, because our biggest struggle as a family was struggling with poverty. But my good karma came in my parents and their morality. And like my parents would, my parents had nothing. And they would give so much even when they had nothing. And then that, to me, that's like left such a big impression on me. And I'm glad that my good karma came in the way of having good parents, because together we faced that like difficult time of being so poor together, and now we're at the other end of that.
It's so beautiful. It's just such an arc of beauty and evolution. It's really inspiring. What can we look forward to? Obviously, a new post on Instagram that's always inspiring and thought-provoking, but what else can we look forward to or check out?
Yeah, I have a number of projects in the works. I've been pretty quiet the past 2 months, obviously, you know, dealing with the pandemic on my own and trying to like maneuver everything. But I've been working on, I'm actually going to start a podcast that's going to be out sometime this summer.
Excellent.
Start recording the first season. And I would love to have you on my podcast.
Absolutely. Already in the calendar.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm working on my next book right now. And that's going to be out early 2021. Yeah, so mainly the podcast and that next book and possibly more books in the future that I can't really talk about yet.
No, don't. Hold those manifestation boundaries. Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful for your time today. You've actually given me, I'm going to actually meditate after this, and you've given me a bit to simmer on beforehand. And I'm so grateful to speak to somebody who does help expand me and expand my thoughts and give me a little to simmer and chew on. I love that oath you took. I'm gonna sit and think about that deeper, because that's a really beautiful thing. It's a whole journey. So thank you so much.
I wanted to thank you too. I think this has been such a joyous conversation. I feel like we haven't ever met in person, but our vibe is so similar.
Yeah. In fact, I already knew that we would get on really well, because I was talking to my friend Layla Delia, who I think you guys know each other decently well.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We've spoken on the phone a number of times. She's a good friend.
I mean, she's an angel. It's crazy. And you know, I told her the conversation was coming up, and she felt confident that we'd have a great connection. And so I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful for your questions as well and chiming in. It's not often that I get that. So I very much look forward to future conversations and connections.
Definitely. I'm super excited. Thank you.
Thank you too. Well, have a beautiful day. A big hello to your wife, who I haven't gotten to meet either. And I hope you guys, stay anchored and grounded and connect soon.
Perfect. I really look forward to it.
If you enjoyed this episode, definitely send it to the friend, the family member, whoever out there could benefit. That's how I garner a lot of my information, are when friends shoot over a really profound episode they've heard somewhere to me. I also want to encourage you, if you want to be entered to win a 1-year membership to The Pathway, go and leave a 5-star podcast review. We've been announcing some really cool ones and reading them off, and it's been pretty profound how already those pathway memberships have been super instrumental to the people who have won them. We'll choose a new winner each month, so listen and hear at the end of the episode to hear if you've won. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our Black and BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.